Thank you for coming on a very wet and soon to be snowy evening. Appreciate it. Hopefully we won't keep you too long, but obviously if you do have questions or things that you'd like to talk about, please let me know. So, just to get started, I thought we could do with some introductions. I'm Curtis Baker. I'm the director of AMATS.
I'm Heather Reidel. I'm with AMATS.
I'm Jeff Gardner with the AMATS staff.
Chad Rook, ODOT District 4 Design Engineer.
Steve Rebio, District 4 Planning Manager.
Fred Wise, I'm a bicyclist.
Dave Mangold, Rail Transportation Advocate, resident of Southern Portage County, Randolph.
Seth Bush, AMATS, GIS.
Who's the writer of AMATS?
Steve Poorman. I live in Akron. Yeah, and
welcome.
So.
That sounds good. Hopefully it won't be too boring for...
Oh.
Yeah.
After I finish my homework.
Okay. Yeah, sounds good. Homework first. That's important. All right, so what we wanted to do is first, we do have our January 18th meeting summary is attached, which you can review at your leisure. Also, basically, looking at what we've discussed or in the past, this month during our AMATS committee meeting, we just had our TAC today. We just discussed the 2014 to 2016 traffic crash report. Helms, how are you doing, sir? That is attachment 5A in the AMATS meeting mail out. Essentially what that tells us is sort of where our crashes are between from 2014 to 2016. It includes a report of bicycle and pedestrian crashes as well as vehicle crashes. What we're seeing, which is an interesting trend, is that the number of crashes that are severe, or severe crashes seem to be trending downward, but fatalities are trending upwards, which is sort of interesting. So we're having less severe accidents than we have in the past, but we've had more fatalities. There's not a lot of agreement on what it is that's causing that. It's almost as if, you know, if you have, you know, in some ways the cars of today are safer, so if you get in a fender bender, you're probably not going to the hospital. But if you get T-boned, on the passenger side, you're probably dying regardless, I guess, not to be too black about it, but that's what it appears. Also, we are reviewing doing... Sorry, is that funny? Sorry.
It's all right.
Yeah, it didn't mean to be
Don't
dark.
Worry about it.
We are discussing, and our policy committee will consider... at our next meeting, supporting an increase in the federal gas tax. The staff is recommending a 15-cent gas tax increase tied to inflation. If the resolution passed next week, we would write letters to our congressional delegation basically stating our support for seeing an increase. It's obviously kind of an interesting time to talk about this sort of thing because currently we've had the Trump administration released an infrastructure proposal. But at the same time, recently he's been quoted saying that he thinks that we should raise the gas tax 25 cents. So it seems like it's a good time to have those discussions, and our board will be discussing those things. Really with that, if there's anything on the agenda that anyone would like to discuss or anything from in the meeting packet, please let me know. But then we would like to move on to a discussion item about the Coordinated Public Transit Human Services Transportation Plan. So, if you have any questions about the current mail out, please let me know. Yeah, let's proceed. Let's go. Let's talk about the draft public coordinated.
I did pass out a memo.
Excellent.
You probably didn't get it.
Okay.
So it says 5A, but it's 5A for the CIC agenda. So if you're looking at the CIC agenda, it's 5A. About every 4 years or so, we produce or update a coordinated public transit human services transportation plan. is to coordinate services between the public transit agencies, Metro and PARTA, and social service agencies. There are a wide variety of social service or human service agencies in Summit County, Portage County, Chippewa Township. So the idea of the plan is to help coordinate those services, either public or private. And for the most part, it's for the transportation of the elderly and the disabled. There are limited resources, it's expensive, so it's best to try to coordinate, share trips between agencies, and do the best they can to schedule people in the most efficient manner possible. So a couple months ago, we started to meet with the public transit operators and the social service agencies, some of which have their own vehicles, some do not have vehicles, so they have to contract. Some people, some agencies work with multiple agencies like United Disability Services, located just south of downtown, contract with a number of agencies. They have a large budget and large fleet of vehicles for social service agencies, so they work with public providers and the other agencies to assist the elderly and the disabled. So over the last couple of months, we worked with the social service agency and came up with a draft list of recommendations. And AMATS has limited funding for what we can do to assist in this effort. And this is something that's been ongoing, and ODOT Office of Transit has been trying to assist with coordination for a number of years now. And the only funds that we really have to assist in this is about $500,000 a year in federal funds to assist the elderly and the disabled. So every other year we go out for projects, and generally those funds have gone towards assisting the social service agencies with procuring small vehicles. They provide curb-to-curb service. They're generally wheelchair accessible, and that's what we've done at AMATS. But there are other things that Metro and PART are trying to do with the social service agencies to assist them, and that's what the plan's about. So we'll have a draft plan available and posted on the AMATS website, also on the PART and the Metro website. But what you have today in front of you is just a list of the draft recommendations. So if you look at that memo, you see that the number one recommendation that AMATS can assist with for funding is to purchase new accessible vehicles, and the majority of that funding goes to social service agencies like United Disabilities Services, Hattie Larlem Family and Community Services in Portage County. So we will do that again this summer, and we will probably get 2 years worth of funding that will go before the AMATS Policy Committee in September. We have it scheduled for so a little over $1 million for whichever social service agencies can use the funds in the most efficient manner and transport the most elderly and disabled people. And then you see that there are a number of other things that they're working on. Increasing travel training, getting people onto public transportation, preferably the line service if possible. That's the most effective way to transport people. Those line service buses are wheelchair accessible. They're also trying to make better connections between stops, sidewalks, and the buses themselves. They're looking at providing new transit service, investing in fare reimbursement solutions, smart fare technology, so it's easier to get on and off the bus, takes less time, you don't have to carry cash. Coordinating between agencies, either having comparable scheduling, computer technology between the different agencies so they can maybe share rides between social service agencies and public providers. Not just for transfers, but sharing common trips with different clients from different agencies. And as part of that, in the past, we had tried to assist the transit agencies with building what would be this mobility management system to try to integrate all of that. It's difficult. So at this point, we're just trying to just transport the people in the most efficient manner. So that draft plan will be available in the next couple of weeks on the man's way. So if anybody has any comments, or we have a comment form, or of course you can email or send them, you can comment to us or Metro or PARTA or any social service agency.
Questions about that? All right, well, we'd like... Oh, sorry.
Can the questions be after they've been there?
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I was trying to do. We can get to this, and then if you have additional questions, we'll circle back. So.
On this subject, I can just agree that coordinating and dispatching, I think, is a good thing. Can I encourage AMATS, if you're going to be doing this for 45 days, I'm not one that uses this service, so therefore I can't give a whole lot of comments on it. Do you have any staff accommodations that would allow you to send some people out into the field and to maybe ride on those, I call them scat buses, I'm not sure if that's correct, and get comments from the users?
We're expecting comments back from the social service agencies themselves.
That's the agencies. I want to get to the actual people. We have a terrible time of getting the public to attend these things. What if... AMATS reached out to get to the actual users of this service for their comments. They're the ones that need to comment on this plan.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I also think that we could probably do it in concert with Metro and PARTA, because it's their services.
Right, you need to coordinate with them.
Right, but I'm sure there's a way that we can collect, whether it be via survey or someone doing a ride-along,
Yeah,
I think the problem is that you'd be spending a lot of staff time to potentially get one comment, because, a lot of these buses will pick up one person, take them. I mean, they don't hold a lot of people.
And they're not going to read the plan while they're riding.
Right,
the bus,
right. So there's some challenges, but I'm sure there's a way, and we can probably talk to Metro and PARTA.
You wouldn't want your comment forms to end up really being a complaint form about
right.
something that they don't like about the service.
Right.
They
yeah.
need to be commenting about the plan.
Yeah.
The other comment I have is, in what way can the rideshare services be in any way used during off-peak hours or non-locations? Now they don't have wheelchair accessibility and such, and that becomes a sticky
issue.
Yeah,
I think that's probably the biggest problem. It's actually a big problem, too, even with, Uber, or because there's been some thought about, could you subsidize trips? Could the transit agency potentially pay 50% of an Uber ride? But there's a lot of concerns about the ADA accessibility of Uber, and
right.
usually there's door-to-door service or curb-to-curb service is, I think, something that that Uber drivers aren't necessarily. I mean, I don't want to say they're not qualified to do it, but aren't aware of what the responsibilities are. So, I think that's a challenge for us is the off-peak stuff. And,
as a real Uber driver, a former Uber driver, I'm not currently doing it over a two-year period, not continuously. I did have one wheelchair and a couple of elderly.
Yeah, and there's been some reports sometimes of Uber people going to pick up somebody in a wheelchair and then saying, I can't fit this in my trunk, and they just...
See, that's the advantage I had with a four-door pickup truck.
Right, right.
But on a day like today, somebody left their wheelchair getting all wet, so it is does become a problem.
All right. If there are any comments on this, I'm sorry. I thought you said something. Move on to ODOT, and I'd like to invite Steve and Chad up to talk a little bit about ODOT's current planning and what we expect to see from them in 2018.
All right. Thank you, Curtis. On behalf of our Deputy Director, John Picuri, I would like to thank you for the opportunity to meet with you folks and bring you up to date what we have in the works for the next 3 to 4 years, maybe. My name is Steve Rebbio. I handle the long-range planning department at District 4. Working with MPOs, working with funds managers, getting projects selected, then we pass them on to Chad's group, he gets them designed, and then we move them out into construction. So basically our presentation, I'm going to have a little bit of some factual information about District 4, some organizational things, then Chad will go into a handful of projects, more locally sponsored, and then I will finish with some bigger ODOT jobs that we have going on in the county. For you guys that don't know, ODOT's made up of 12 districts. Obviously, we're District 4 up in the northeast corner. We have four what we consider urban districts that kind of, you know, mirror us. We compare ourselves and operate kind of like District 12 in Cleveland, District 6 in Columbus, and District 8 in the Cincinnati area. Then we have like four more that are kind of medium sized, and then four that are really, really rural, some of the southern and the western. We are the only district that works with three MPOs. We work with SCATS down in Canton. We work with Eastgate and Mahoning and Trumbull County, and then, of course, AMATS and Portage and Summit. Some of the issues and challenges facing ODOT in District 4, you know, we're a small state, 35th in geographical size, but we have a huge system. I mean, we're in the middle of everything, east and west, and from Michigan getting vehicles and things down to the south. So we have the seventh largest highway system in the country, second largest inventory of bridges in the country, and the fourth largest interstate network with our small geographical area. So a lot of challenges for the department and us. We're responsible for just under 5,000 lane miles of roadway in District 4. As you can see, that would stretch, you know, keeping this system up to date and programming projects and maintaining it, get you out to California and back. Back in 2011, we merged our planning and engineering departments at the district into one division called P&E, Planning and Engineering. We were kind of separate and siloed before that time. Proved over the last 7 years to be very successful. We're pretty much one seamless department with the project selection and the project development. And with our size and our three MPO areas, we're continually one of the two or three busiest districts in the state. In that 7 year period since we merged in 2011, we've sold over 850 jobs, totaling about $1.7 billion. So in any given year, that we probably sell 120 to 125 projects, valued at probably $250-$275 million. So last summer, Central Office Director Ray and his assistant directors decided that merger proved so beneficial and worthwhile that he made a decision to roll in the construction department in with the planning and the engineering. So last summer, we created a new position, as you can see here. It's called the Capital Programs Administrator. Administration is the department name. Jerry Nero was named our Capital Programs Administrator. So basically, like what I said, we rolled in the construction department with the planning and engineering. So now, under one umbrella, under one person, you know, we're selecting projects, working with funds managers. Chad's folks are getting them designed, and now we have Dave James out in construction that is getting them built. And we're bringing construction, we're working with them more and more. We're bringing them in early on, even in the planning phases, getting their opinions on things, constructability, things like that. So it's been about a half a year, but I think it's going to be very worthwhile for us. And now, let me say one thing before I start. We have three types of projects, basically, in the department. What we call traditional, that are sponsored by a local city or a county engineer or somebody, where they'll go hire the engineering firm, they'll put the contract on the street, and they'll build the job. And then we have a second type that's called locally sponsored, but we will let it as a department. So we could have a city, Cuyahoga Falls, Stowe, you name it. They get funding from Curtis, or they get safety money or whatever. They go hire the designer, yet we end up as a department selling the contract and administering it. We call those locally sponsored, ODOT-led. So Chad manages all that. And then our third type are ODOT-ODOTs, where kind of our programs, our consultants, our construction folks. And I guess I will talk about those at the very end.
Thank you, Steve.
Once again, I'm Chad Ruth, the engineering manager. I'll somewhat correct him on his terminology. traditional LPA projects are projects that are administered by ODOT on the construction side, but the local on the design side. Non-traditional are administered by the locals from the engineering right-of-way all the way through construction. Subtle little difference there, just in terminology. So I'm just going to go over a few of the bigger projects that we have in the AMATS area over the next few years. They're listed here, but I'll go through them individually on the next couple slides. The first one is County Road 17, 16.51. This is in the city of Fairlawn. Essentially Cleveland-Maslin Road from 77 exit ramp all the way up to just south of Route 18. Improvements here include, so currently at that, if you're familiar with that area, you can come here, a lot of times you sit there and you're stuck to make a left turn, creates a little backup on the ramp. What this project will do is it essentially gets rid of the left-hand turn. The ramp becomes a right-only movement, and as currently planned, there is a roundabout at Rothrock Road. So the roundabout will help with traffic flow. If you're going to continue north into Fairlawn, you'll continue through the roundabout. If you want to go south, you'll actually use the roundabout essentially to do a U-turn and come back the other direction. Also part of that project, they're essentially going from 2 to 4 and 5 lanes for most of the stretch. Pretty big project, $8.8 million project. It is set to start in spring of 20. Next project is in the city of Greene. $9.3 million project, start date summer of 2019. Another roundabout project. Actually, it'll be a 3 separate roundabouts on 241. Get off there on 77, gonna have a roundabout at Raber Road, a roundabout in the middle, and a roundabout at 619. The roundabout at Raber and 619 will be dual lane roundabouts. And the one in the middle will be a single lane roundabout. And it will also, it's only 2 lanes through there now. It'll essentially be 2 lanes in each direction then. Very big project there, as you can see by the $9.3 million price tag. Should really help out this area. And many other things with this project. Green is pretty progressive in looking at the pedestrian facilities and have a trail on one side and a sidewalk on the other side. The center area is going to be used for BMPs and help with the drainage and just the water in there. Next one is actually a pretty big project. City of Akron, their Main Street project. They had received $5 million Tiger grant to improve from Mill Street up to near State Street. Improvements on this project, so it's a corridor project, another roundabout on this project at Mill Street, also replacing the State Street Bridge in between the stadium and the O'Neill's parking deck. It'll be it's a wide bridge there now. It'll go to a 2-lane bridge there. So that's with this project. Unique project in that typically we do what's called design, bid, build on our projects. Someone designs it, it goes out for bid, contractor wins it with a low bid, and then it's built by that contractor. For the Main Street project, it's a design, build project. Akron has put together a document with all the requirements and restrictions for this entire corridor, and now they shortlisted 3 teams, which a team is comprised of a designer and then also the construction. They've shortlisted 3 teams, and now what they've requested is a proposal from those teams. So those teams have approximately 6 weeks. I think their bids are due sometime in April, where the low bidder isn't just based on the price, it's also been based on what do they plan on doing, how did they meet the requirements of the design build document. So it's kind of like a 2-part award system. So we have a grading system already put in place for this project. But once again, adding bike lanes, on-street parking, green infrastructure. Akron was very careful on this project. They reached out to the businesses, they reached out to the busing, and they knew a big business concern is the parking. So I think in the end, did not see any reduction in parking. So I think that was a good thing. And also you will see some green infrastructure through here. Okay, so the next few projects are what we talked about is the traditional LEP projects. Local has a contract to get it through design. We as ODOT, our primary role is we're still managing it. We're making sure it meets all the specifications. But ultimately, the designer is under contract to the local. So the first one is Summit 91, 21.65. This is in the city of Twinsburg, and it is a continuation of an earlier project that ended at Glenwood. So it continues from Glenwood to the north towards Solon. I guess a theme here in the projects we have talked about is there is another roundabout on this project, that post. So it's a $4 million project, and we are selling this project very soon, and it'll start being built this summer. Next project is Summit Cleveland Massillon Road in the city of Norton. This project's been on, was actually broken into three phases in the city of Norton, and originally we were only going to build phase two with this project. AMAX recently awarded the next phase money. We decided it was in the best interest to pull that money up into this project to basically take a season or so off that job. So it's a widened Cleveland Massillon Road in the city of Norton from Shannon to Pleasant and then to Weber. I guess so, Shannon to Weber. Next one, Summit Howe Road in Cuyahoga Falls, Akron area. Goes from Main Street to Buckholzer. Going to totally replace all the concrete pavement out there. I know this concrete pavement has been an issue for years. It's never in good condition. They're always out there doing spot repairs. All of that pavement is coming up. It'll be replaced by asphalt. Challenging project. A lot of traffic going to the mall, Sam's Club, all the businesses on both sides. What will end up happening in this project is during phase of construction, it'll be one way westbound. Eastbound traffic will make the right onto Home Avenue, and then go down to Independence to go left, and then down Buckholzer to bypass the area. We've tried to use some heavy outreach efforts on this area, knowing it's going to have an impact. But we've reached out to Cuyahoga Falls. They've had meetings. We're going to do a big PR push on this one just to let everyone know everything's still going to be open for business. It's all, we're going to do as good a job as we can keeping everything open and moving smooth through here.
So the, sorry, the east, so you're, if you're getting off at the end interchange,
yes.
Regardless, you want to go to Chapel Hill,
yes.
You're turning right on Home Avenue.
You're turning right on Home. There will be a short stretch. The first phase of the job will be to do the area from getting off of 8 up to Home, so there will be a closure there for a period of time. That's the first phase to get that done. I don't know exactly what that closure period is,
though. And I think that's just kind of interesting because I feel like with maintenance and traffic, most you would assume that that retail district is most benefited from the interchange. You know what the reason was for? You know, was it just byproduct of the way the project needed to be constructed?
The way it needs to be constructed. And there was a lot of thought into that by our MOT people in the Cuyahoga Falls as to the best way. So as you do get off there, it's still relatively easy to access those businesses on the north and south side. So when you come off Home, you have that first traffic signal that you can go left that takes all those businesses.
So and you go left,
go left
Home Depot,
and then you go
to
the Home Depot drive. That gets you access to all those businesses.
Yeah. It's just like probably the stuff that's further down, the Panera, the Dick's Sporting Goods, things like that, people are going to be probably going to need to go all the way down to Independence.
Still can go either way.
Yeah, you still probably could,
right.
You? So we're going to. So in reality, the parking lots and those private service roads could take on a lot of that traffic.
Yes.
Which would be great for business.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, I mean,
depending where you're at.
Yeah, and Chad's right. I mean, this is just. This is one of those projects that has to be done. I mean, it has to be done.
Won't you wind up with almost all the traffic going down the two side roads down the parking lots? Because who's going to go down to Independence? You're not going to want to go.
Yeah, no. I mean, unless you're going to the mall.
The mall or Sam's.
The mall or Sam's. Because you couldn't get.
Traffic will adjust. So traffic makes the adjustment on. It's going to see what everyone's doing. And if you think too many people are going through there, you'll go around. It'll be easier.
Will you be able to go all the way to Buckholzer on through the side streets? Because you can't.
It does not go all the way through.
But that will be closed then, and how Avenue will be closed from there to how close it? From where the end of it?
Yes.
Okay. So you really can't use it. Right.
Just access the
business. So you can get all the way to like Value City Furniture.
Yes.
But you can't get up over that little hill where the old, where Dick's used to be.
Right.
Right? Because there's like a big retaining wall or something.
You can't get that far. You can't get past the.
Well, actually, you probably can't get past the
Toys R Us.
Yeah, you're right. That's what's that road called? Cliffside or that little road?
I know the road. It's right there by the finger.
There's a high accident, high crash area for a long time.
Right.
Yeah.
It's going to be bigger, too.
Well, why was a decision made to replace with asphalt? What about long-term durability of the pavement?
We're undercutting this road by like 2 feet. Part of the problem was the base on this road. That's why the concrete was
never adequately done.
What's that?
Wasn't adequately done previously.
I would tell you that based on the amount of concrete, the failure of the concrete, I would say the base was not adequately built. Mm-hmm. We will undercut here and it will be adequately built.
But we could run into the problems with the failed asphalt pavement. We certainly have a lot of problems out in the rural areas of Portage County. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see a major project like this having to come back to grease the pockets of the asphalt lobby. Now, granted, I know there's a lot of expense with putting in the concrete, but if properly done and properly maintained, it's a very long, durable road.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I don't see that ODOT is doing that.
We do put a good amount of thought into what road. Typically, bigger projects, we have a pavement committee that we have to go to and bounce, you know, asphalt, concrete, what's best in here. But there was a pavement design done for this, and it was just determined that it would be asphalt on this road moving forward.
Why was it determined that way? What were the variables that you considered? Sorry, I like asking.
Yeah, no, I understand. I think that the overall life of it's all considered. I mean, you do a cost-benefit analysis on all of this when
that's
we do
fine.
It.
So I'm glad to hear you've done
yes,
that.
Yes, we do a cost-benefit analysis. I think in the future, being that this area, too, is so heavily traveled, when you do have to do work on it or someday when you have to come back and resurface it, the asphalt is easier for us to come in for anyone, Cuyahoga Falls, because it's not a no-doubt road. It's Cuyahoga Falls. To come in and do an asphalt resurfacing as opposed to the concrete and with the cure times, it's a longer project than you have concrete pavement.
And I will say, just from the local perspective, just talking to Cuyahoga Falls, Talmadge, etc., they're all regretting having these concrete roads now. They're not happy with them. And so I think from a political perspective.
Built and maintained, I don't think you'd be having the problem. Who was the contractor that did the concrete on 76 East? That's holding up pretty well. I think that was a damn good contractor. There's been a little bit of patchwork, but I guess that's just normal. Rewarding contracts to contractors to do good work is what ODOT should be doing.
And as you know, we go by local. We have pre-qualified contractors that are qualified. They're deemed that they're qualified, and then once they're qualified, they're low bidder.
We'll put a maintenance requirement in there, and then see. Of course, they go bankrupt, and then you're still stuck with fixing it anyway.
We've talked here, but our emphasis on maintenance of these roads, of any road, has greatly increased. The treatments we're doing on our system from a maintenance standpoint, from micro-surfacings to our crack sealing to our fine-graded, our goal is to extend the life of every single pavement. We're putting a heck of a big emphasis on the maintenance of the road. But you're right, there have been times where, unfortunately, roads, it was built and it wasn't maintained.
As a user, I like to see smooth roads like everybody and good use of the tax money.
Just what percentage of, how much of it did you influence the design of this, of this project?
How much did we influence the design? It was driven by Cuyahoga Falls.
And what part did you do?
So they hired the consultant to design the project. We play a heavy role in these because we're doing it on the backside. So we're building. So we make it built to our standards, the whole set of plans. We make it, the plans look like an ODOT set of plans. On the other type of project, the non-traditional, the locals can put them more in the plans that they're used to putting in, which is often less stringent than what ODOT has. But we get involved. We help steer decisions, or we make recommendations, anything from drainage to the pavement type to the BM to the BMPs, best management practices for the flow of water and how you're going to treat that. We get involved, but ultimately it's their call.
So do they override you a number of times? How do you think you fit into that? How much influence do you have?
I think we have a relatively decent amount of influence.
Yes.
Good. Next one is Portage-Talmadge Road. Reconstruction and widening of Talmadge Road and the relocation and widening of Mogador Road in Portage County. This project has a couple different funding sources on it. It started out with safety funding that got the project moving, and now it also has some AMATS money as well as what we call CAO, County Engineer Association of Ohio money. So multiple funding sources. It's redoing a ramp at widening Talmadge Road for from the interchange to, I don't know the exact show limits there.
Just beyond the Maple Crest Golf Course.
Just beyond the Maple Crest Golf Course. It's kind of a goofy interchange if you drive this area with the way that the interchange ties into 18. So on the north side, the ramp is actually going to tie into Mogador Road. It'll be a major change. It's going to tie into Mogador Road, and then from Mogador, you'll tie into 18 there.
Not the way it currently is.
No. Our off-ramp, our westbound 76 off-ramp, will come off and tie into Mogador Road. Then Mogador Road kind of goes, jogs around the corner to the right, and it'll all come in at one point. Because right now there's two points there, and the signal can't operate as efficiently as it should.
I believe this is the last one. This is actually, it has multiple funding sources as well. It's considered more of an ODOT project, though, because 91 and 224 are our maintenance responsibilities. It's in a township through here. This is going to start in March of 2019. I actually presented to the Summit County Council on this project approximately a month to 6 weeks ago, but it's to widen Camp Road and to create a northbound left turn lane and eastbound right lane and proper eastbound left turn and southbound left turn storage lanes at 224 intersection. So one of the key things here is you're going north. So you have 224 here. On the north side of the intersection is State Route 91. On the south side of the intersection is Canton Road. Canton Road is the responsibility of Summit County Engineer. 91 is still in the township. That's our responsibility. 224 is in the township. That's our responsibility. On the south side of the intersection, we are adding it so you can do a dual turn to go north to go west. So there'll be dual turn lanes there. Another major component of the project is there'll be a median put down there through the middle. Primary reason for the median is if you can envision yourself at the gas stations or any of the stores there, you'd have to come across basically five or six lanes just to continue north. Not good for safety. So we're going to install a median along there. Now your question is, well, how does someone go left? It'll be the first time we do this here in District 4. So you're on the west side of the road. You come out of one of those businesses. You'll make a right turn. You'll come up to Springfield Lake Drive, and we have what's called a dedicated U-turn. You'll come to that signal. You'll get a phase, and then you'll wrap around. And we actually bought a property. We bought a house. And you're going to wrap around. You're going to do a U-turn, and then that takes you north.
Michigan left. That'll be real educational. Thanks for anybody that's never.
It will be. But you see, it's good that you knew exactly what it was. It's right. Michigan left.
Okay. Well, I've traveled up in Michigan.
Okay.
Extensively. It's functional and it does avoid that conflict at the intersection.
Right.
But you've got to be careful doing it.
You have to. There's always a little bit of a learning curve, but we're trying to get rid of all those accidents. There's a significant amount of accidents in that corridor because a lot of times when you have gas stations at intersections, you end up having accidents because people shoot out right into traffic. Now going northbound, we also are going to have a U-turn going there as well, coming back the other direction.
And lots of signs to explain to everybody
signage,
how to...
Yes.
It's the kind of thing you kind of want to when it first opens to the public, just kind of sit on the side of the road and just kind of watch. My in-laws are from Michigan, so I'm kind of...
Right.
I mean, I'm sure we'll do some type of special outreach before that, too.
Yeah.
Like maybe when we're ready to sell it and everything else, put some brochures together and get with the Beacon Journal.
Right.
In the earlier projects, you had mentioned roundabouts, and even in downtown Akron, you don't have roundabouts in any of these, and is that just because they're heavier business districts, or...?
So going back a while ago... I would say going back, the previous county engineer, he wanted to build a roundabout at Springfield Lake Drive. The current county engineer believed that was too close to the intersection and was concerned that there would be backup into the roundabout, so that option was basically no longer pursued. It was looked at for a little bit. But
the education for all these new roundabouts, too. I almost got clobbered at the one up at Miller Road, I think it is. People need to understand those in the roundabout have the right-of-way. You don't just come charging in from the side roads. And I don't think we've... I assume they're teaching it in driver's ed now, but the older population that didn't grow up with roundabouts, I think, is showing some aggressive driving, probably resulting in some collisions. I'm curious to look here to see... how many roundabout areas have had significant?
There's definitely an education component to it, and we understand that. And we're trying to, with the cities that are putting them in, to get them out and do those educational, let people know how to drive them. So an example is I was with my dad recently, and he was driving, and we were coming up on a roundabout. So I'm just watching him. I want to see what he's thinking. And I'm from a town called Fremont, Ohio, and there is a roundabout there, but it's on a heavy traveled road where there's not a lot of side traffic. So as we're approaching it, I'm just watching him and seeing what he's looking at. So finally, as we got close, I said, Dad, look left. Just look left. He's like, what do you mean look left? I'm like, there's a car in the roundabout coming around. They have the right of way. He's like, so all I have to do is look left? I said, all you have to do is look left. So I don't know. And he gets it now, but it's how to get that same concept to everyone. I actually recommended to one of the people, like, why don't we just have a sign that says look left?
There you go.
Yeah.
It should be an MUTCD sign for that, maybe. And those double roundabouts are functional, but tricky under heavy traffic conditions. You need to be careful. There's one up in Cleveland near the Steel Yard Commons that I use often, and I'm still very careful there. I don't like the double ones, but I see that they are very functional, and again, it has that educational... aspect to it. But it should help in aiding traffic flow, at least that's what the studies show.
It does move traffic.
And they are safer.
Lower speed and a higher angle collision is what I've always been told. So they're
glancing blows as opposed to
the T-bones that our director's worried about.
Right.
Which
those will kill you.
So we heard it.
Well, roundabouts were all the buzz, what about a decade and a half or two ago at the TRB, so I was meeting with all the researchers. And I don't think the general public knows a lot about all the scientific research that's been done with that. The slower speeds and the higher angle prove to be more survivable collisions. And I haven't traveled yet there, but I understand roundabouts are very much used in Europe.
Yes. If you ever just want to go to Carmel, Indiana, you can.
There's 70 of them in Carmel.
There's over 100.
Suburban Indianapolis.
Yes, over 100.
You can look at it on Google Maps. They're finally catching up with the street view on it.
Constant roundabouts. In those areas, you have to prove a roundabout doesn't work before you build a signal.
Oh, really? Well, there's tremendous cost savings to not having design, maintain, and operate signal systems.
Yes.
Of course, your upfront costs.
It's just
upfront.
A lot of earthwork and design.
They're bigger. It's more of an impact. Oftentimes, you get into more right-of-way impacts, utility impacts. So there is a bigger upfront cost. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to close out with a handful of ODOT jobs, ODOT driven. And I guess the first one isn't huge dollars, but I wanted to give AMATS. Some serious props. This first job is Portage 303 out in Streetsboro, the flooding area that I'm sure you guys, if you've lived around here for a long time, just this section of 303 between the railroad tracks and 14.
It's probably flooded right now.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. The barricades are up as we speak.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but AMATS, you know, it didn't really fit their normal application cycle. You know, if you just looked at the job based on PCRs and things like that, it wouldn't have ever gotten funding. But knowing it was of regional significance and the detour when this road is closed, really props to you guys for helping them out. So it sells in the spring. I think it's actually sold. So it's sold already. We have a pre-con in March. They're going to start in April. Basically, we're going to use some lightweight material and raise that road about 5 to 6 feet, I believe. Not all of it, the eastern half of it. We ran into a very unique and rare wetland on the west side where we really can't do anything.
That's the first time in my career.
It's called a Fen Wetland, and there's like a couple of them east of the Mississippi.
And that maintenance of traffic is going to be pretty crazy, too. I think that's going to be one way on 303 for a while.
Yeah. But they have the locals, though.
Yeah.
It'll be all the way around. But,
what are the two parentheses on the top title?
Those are just the, we name bridges by straight line mileages. So I think those are just the starting, I think there's some culverts out on the western end. Those are like limits on where they start the job. There's a western limit is 070, the culvert, and then the actual road work starts at 1 point.
So 303, when it hits the portage line,
it starts
0.00.
Okay.
So the 0.71, 0.7 is the start, 0.7 miles into Portage County.
We don't ever use those numbers because nobody knows what they mean. So.
We gaslight people.
First bigger job I wanted to talk about is the upcoming improvements to the central interchange that we have on the books. Going to sell in fiscal year 2021. It's currently estimated at $50 million. The crux to this job, we've got bad geometrics on the eastbound to northbound ramp there. You can see this curve is just horrible. And then westbound to southbound, you know, you're driving like 60 miles an hour through there, and then all of a sudden you've got to slow down to low 20s to make those movements. So, and there are a couple of the, condition-wise, they are, these structures really need replaced. So, our consultants is hired. We're at like stage one. So we're going to go on a much better geometric path where the ramps will be more like 40 to 45 mile an hour ramps. They'll be up high. And be a nice, $50 million is a big figure, but we studied this as part of a big long corridor study probably back in 2005, 2006. And the recommendation at that time was to really blow up the whole interchange and push everything out, and it was nearly $400 million. And in those, that was probably to build it in 2015. If we build it today, it would probably be a $500 million job that nobody has. So, we're doing the most critical two movements for a tenth of the price. So,
they'll still be left-handed exits, though.
They will be left-handed exits, and like I said, they're going to be 40 to 45 miles an hour versus 20. So, and there will also be some new lane assignment in the center, too. So, it'll help congestion through there, and it's a high crash area. It's on a couple of your guys' list.
And worth noting, this is La Follette here. This structure will be removed with this project. And there'll be a pedestrian bike bridge that cross approximately in the middle between La Follette and Bear, crossing right here. This is a low ADT road. Akron was on board with us doing this. This was a major pinch point for us right here. The bridge had to come back, and we would have had to purchase these six houses with the project. By removing this bridge and putting a pedestrian bridge here, all that is saved.
And their biking plan, I think Akron's put together a biking plan.
Rubber City Heritage
or something, really get this part of the city for the first time involved in any in a biking connection. So they're very happy with that. But basically, like I said, this thing's going to sell in the spring of 21. Probably definitely be a multi-season job. But we're very happy it's ongoing. Just within the last couple months, we received what we have a program in central office that's called Major Rehab, Major Rehabilitation. And basically what they do is this fund's manager, they keep track of all the priority system pavements conditions across the state of Ohio. You know, all the lane miles, he gets a pretty significant allocation, but just with all the development that's been going on across the state, we really haven't updated this program since probably like 2011, 2012. But finally did some analysis of all the pavement segments across the state, and I guess luckily or not luckily, we had a couple pieces that jumped out as really being in bad condition. The west leg, basically the west leg in red there was probably rated like number 5 and number 6, you know, worst segment of pavement in the state. And built in the late 50s, early 60s, just tons of ADT. So basically what we're going to do is, like I said, we got $100 million in the fall. And what it's going to do, we're going to completely replace in kind from down here in the Waterloo Road area up to that central interchange project. And then where Main Broadway's ongoing now, the western end of that, all the way out to where that concrete pavement section ends by Vern Odom. That will be completely replaced in kind, and, you know, replaced with new pavement or concrete, whatever is selected, but no widening, nothing else, just replace what's there. I guess I could go through a couple other things. We've had, for about 3.5 to 4 years, we've had a study of the whole Beltway system through Akron ongoing. And one of the first things to come out of the Beltway based on condition was to do the central. This segment down here, south, you know, towards the Arlington to 224, 277 area, was the second item to really come out, to add capacity there to get more people in to the system. And I guess at the end of the day, out of the system. So it's currently under design. We do not have any construction money for that. We would go to a board called the TRAC, Transportation Review Advisory Council. They fund all the big widening jobs across the state. But so that's under development. The Central's under development. This we're going to sell together in 2021. The only other couple small things we're investigating are smaller capacity things on either end of the Kenmore leg. You know, slight additions to a ramp if we can squeeze another, you know, another lane in. But, and I think the game plan is to sell that major rehab in 2021 also. And then the last big dollar job we have is the replacement of the high-level bridge on State Route 8 in between Perkins and, what is it? Glenwood. Structure is an older structure. It's an old truss bridge. You know, we've done a couple maintenance jobs to it in the last 15 to 20 years. Continually, you know, we're out there inspecting it annually, but it's just at the end of its useful life. So, what we're going to do with this, the game plan is to, similar to the Interbelt Bridge up in Cleveland, I don't know if you guys paid attention to how that was all constructed by the Progressive Field. This structure is going to be replaced off, the next structure is going to be built, the first structure is going to be built to the west. All new, on a slightly new alignment, and it'll have enough space, it'll be wide enough to handle all the traffic that's there now. So you'll build it offline without disruption to the, you know, daily disruption to the traveling public. Then, you know, we have a little bit of time to connect the roadway. Then this current structure will be demoed, and then the second structure will be built. But Also going to be in 2021, $125 million. I guess the only other thing I would say with this is we've done extensive aesthetics outreach with the local communities, City of Akron, University of Akron, Historical Society, Canal, Metro Parks, because we think there's opportunities with the structure and some of the noise walls that'll go up near this Summit 8 bridge and in the central with noise walls and MSE walls in the central, that we think we can really get creative and do some aesthetic treatments that we really haven't done in the area ever. So.
And similar to the Interbelt Bridge, we'll most likely be setting up cameras on this during construction so people can watch it. It'll be kind of neat with the technique that we're designing to build it. It's called launching. So you're going to start and build the first pier, and you're going to build the bridge, and then you're literally going to launch it at an angle, and then it comes down right to the pier. And then you build the next pier, and this has got a ramp on it, and it pushes out. And you're basically just pushing the bridge. You're launching it. Kind of a neat technique to build a bridge.
Engineering nerd.
I think it's neat.
I think I've seen a video of something like that.
Yeah, the one by the Hoover Dam was done.
They did that? Okay. Yeah. I saw a video of something like a bridge in China where they kind of
built
a pier, but
just keeps going like that.
Yeah.
One project you didn't mention was the construction job on the concrete on Route 8.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't have to go into details, but that one.
How did I miss that?
That one,
yes,
too, is
$30 million. You drive through it twice a day. The concrete section from Graham Road all the way up to the beyond 303 sells in July. So $47 million, going to completely replace the pavement that's in there. What's that?
Yeah, more bump.
That's a bad section.
And that one's going to be that one's probably going to strangle commuting a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's just again with the
and that's just resurfacing it to.
It's a total replacement.
Total replacement.
Yeah.
The alignment staying the same though and everything.
What's that?
The alignment staying the same.
Yeah. No widening. Okay. No anything.
Yes.
And is that going to be asphalt?
Will they shut down? Move the lanes to the other side.
There will be crossovers.
Crossovers?
Yeah, there will be crossovers.
Concrete or asphalt?
I think that's asphalt.
I believe it is a switch to asphalt.
Well, the asphalt lobby's working hard in the state, aren't they?
They went.
I don't love that. No one lobbies me.
I mean, based
on the price of that one, that had to go in front of the pavement selection committee, I'm sure.
And did the cost benefit analysis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, thank you for that. That has been on our radar screen. I mean, we had the plans done literally about 3 years.
Do we anticipate construction to begin in August or
September? Yes, and I think when you talked about contraflow and switching over, I think they want to get a lot of that in that first season.
Settled, okay.
Get it this fall and everything else. And yeah, that road is bad.
You take an old 8 and get downtown.
When was the Route 8 project done for making it? Interstate,
north of 303 was what? When did that end? 2012?
11, 12.
10 or, I'd say 10 or 11.
But this pavement dates well before
that.
This
pavement.
This is south of there.
70, 80s?
Not 80s, I don't think.
So it's gone through its useful life cycle.
And then the communities through there are continuing.
There was some major work done just a few years ago with all the joints, right? They were all cut out and replaced. And
just to buy it
a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
Anything else? Oh.
On that section, there was, probably all of State Route 8, there was talk about having some sort of application for it to become an interstate. 380, I believe. Is there any talk about that? Do you know?
Not recently with us.
Yeah, last time we spoke to ODOT, it had still been sort of shut down. I don't think they're interested. I think from ODOT's perspective, it has a lot more to do with would the maintenance all be hoisted on them? I mean, for the most part, they do most of the maintenance on Route 8, but minor maintenance is done by the locals, I believe. Is that correct?
Salting, too.
We have extraordinary. The city's plow and salt.
Yeah.
Right.
We do the village.
Right.
So
you
do
Boston
Heights.
But
everything else is the city's.
Mm-hmm. So, but it's. I know there are some mayors that are still interested. It's just getting the right people to be.
Yeah, I really haven't heard that for couple of years since they talked to Director Ray.
So these two are not the right people. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
No.
I actually brought it up when I was meeting with Randy Cole and John Picuri. Shot down real quick.
We'll probably be up against the deadline here, but I understand there's something going on at Talmadge Road and State Route 44 in the township of Rootstown.
A small safety job.
There's a business that's going to be destroyed, and I guess they'll relocate, but you're going to improve the right turn.
There'll be a drop right, yeah. Southbound on 44, right in front of, a little south of Neo Yukon.
Right. We're going to lose our favorite pizza shop.
Yes. Your favorite pizza shop is going to be relocated, but there will be a drop right. I think a little bit of lanes, squaring up the lanes east and west against
each
other.
Does that start this spring yet?
I think it sells next spring.
Oh, so I got a little while to get the photo yet. Yeah. You're not going to be tearing
down.
I
think it's a spring of 19 sale.
Okay.
Yeah, we're still in the acquisition part of the project.
Yeah.
And then
utilities.
And if you live out that way, then still on County Route 18, farther to the east, where you get out by 14.
Okay.
You know, there's a feed mill and thing out that way.
Right.
That intersection has got a small safety job.
Wait, on Talmadge and 14?
In Edinburgh.
Yes.
Yeah. What's that job?
I think it's maybe adding a left or something, slightly straightening it out.
It's a strange angle.
Yes, a bad angle.
So my wife works
out there. I think some access management, because all the businesses that are there just are like all asphalt and everything. Those will both be coming.
Yeah, all the high school kids, too, coming down from the south.
Yes, sir.
I have a general question. You talked about doing design build versus design contract and build. Is there an advantage? Is there something that gives you what are the advantages?
Go ahead.
Oftentimes we go design build when the schedule's a little bit tighter.
It goes faster.
It does go faster. You know, put together a document as opposed to put together a whole set of plans where we do a stage one, stage two, stage three review, multiple reviews. Typically there's less right of way involved. You know, right-of-way acquisition takes us a long period, you know, anywhere from a year to 18 months. So there's less right-of-way involved for those projects.
Does it result in a better road at the end of that, or not? Better designed road?
I don't think there's too much difference in the end quality. 271 at 82 was all designed built.
The current job that's going on in the Barberton-Norton area, the widening of 76, that's a design-build project.
Prefer to do it that way?
It's all like project by project basis. I can't say I prefer one way or the other.
But if time is crunched, and you know, a lot of times for us, you know, we'll get the money, and the money really needs to be spent in a certain year.
I
pray that
in terms of building some buildings, not type road stuff, but where they wind up that they get halfway through and decide that the design wasn't quite right. And you've wasted stuff.
We haven't got that.
It's broken out into buildable units. So from a roadway, you know, you start at your bridge foundations. We review those, and then you're building up from there. The roadway, you're looking at the pavement design. You're looking at your widths. Just constant buildable units from drainage to the roadway to the signal systems to the lighting systems. In a building, you shouldn't get problems midway through because the design build document they put out should be clear enough in its what they want, that they don't end up with that problem. Now, if you don't have a good design build document, because you're always going to get the minimum, because a contractor and that team, they want to make money. So that's why you have to be very careful in the document you write. Be very specific when you need to be.
How much of the work that you guys do is maintaining something that's existing versus building
all over?
I think we calculate about 92% to 93%. Of our funding goes to maintaining what we have.
How would that be affected with the way that they're talking about paying for this new project budget that the president was talking about?
But I think, just for my opinion, that would be the bigger capacity jobs.
It wouldn't help maintenance at all.
Yeah, it's not going to help
maintenance. So how are you going to fund maintenance? If that's all
we're going to have to continue to do what we're doing, but
I mean, kind of what Akron did passed a
two bonds.
Yeah, pass a local levy to another 0.25% or That's what Barberton's done. That's what Ravenna's done. But, I mean, it's not enough. You know, I mean, in reality, it's not enough. It's, I think for Akron, it'll stop some of the bleeding, but it's, you know, it's not there. I mean, I think with this infrastructure bill that Trump wants to fund, it's all about transformational projects. And quite frankly, and the match is 80% local, 20% federal.
No one has that.
Yeah, and unless you're already doing it, you're not. That's not enough of a carrot to say, oh yeah, I'm going to do this transformational project now because I only have to spend 80% of the $100 million versus, you know, it's. So I.
Little towns aren't going to be a smaller.
Right.
Place. You're looking at like New York. And
yeah, exactly. Like big. Yeah, places where, or places, you know, where you can already.
Or where you can toll, or you're
right.
Already toll.
And that's the other issue is that with Ohio, we just, there's no benefit, you know, from a private investment perspective, because the tolling, none of our tables are going to be showing growth in Northeast Ohio that we're going to have more cars in 30 years than we are today. So, you know, it's not real Rust Belt friendly, the bill. I also don't think that would be the bill that would happen, but it tells you where they, you know, it's like their priorities. And most likely it would be funded through just gutting, like, the transit program, gutting the Tiger program, all those things.
I wouldn't stand for that. Is the gas tax going to be able to get the trust fund out of its...
No, not right now. If we get 10 cents, we get back to solvent. If we get 15 cents, we spend a little bit more. If we get 25 cents,
then that would finally make it...
Yeah.
In the positive again,
mm-hmm.
But I would not stand for the loss of transit, moving large volumes of people. It's still been proven that transit is the way to move large volume of people, and we still need to do more of that in Northeast Ohio.
We got to have bicycles too.
And don't forget about multimodal transportation.
But I guess just to finish your point with, you know, 90-some percent, and it goes back, I think Chad mentioned a little bit about what we call asset management. In our budget shortfall in the last 4 to 5 years has forced our hand into that. We could no longer afford to build a nice, thick 4-inch or 3-inch treatment, not do anything for 10 or 12 years. There's not enough money to go around to continue to do that. So we are doing lesser treatments at a higher PCR band, you know. So we may build a road, then 2 years later we're going to crack seal it. And then 3 years after that, we're going to put a thin micro topping on it. And then a couple years after that, we'll do a 1-inch, you know, overlay. Just trying to extend that, you know, 10-year life out to 15 or 18 or anything we could do it. All driven by money. We're trying to stretch our own dollars as far as we can humanly stretch them.
Does that result in having more potholes and cracks because you're not doing that?
Well, we shouldn't, because we're hitting those, like I said, at a higher PCR band. It's a hard public relations sell sometimes where you'll go out and do a road that looks in good shape to Joe Q Public. You know, why are you working on this one where this road over here is full of potholes? Well, we're trying to stretch our money and, you know, system-wide we're making these decisions.
This year the roads are just looking the worst I've ever seen them. So,
yeah,
and I can't buy a bicycle.
I was talking today. We had a meeting this afternoon, talking to the Portage County Engineer's Office, and you know said that it's just they. I mean, a lot of people think it's just the weather, the fluctuations in the temperature, and then on top of that too, saying that you know some of their equipment is still.
The
used for snow, so they can do some cold patching, but they can't put their
Please
whole crew, you know. So I think
now.
It's just,
Thank
it's
you.
Because we had a 70-degree day, you know, and all that stuff, and everything popped, and now we're, you know, we don't have the staff's not ready yet to start filling these
and
things.
It's been rainy, too.
I mean, yeah, but Akron's, I mean, you know, Akron's bad. I mean, it's just,
yeah.
it's a challenge.
Parts of the market where you can see the brick underneath.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, for sure. And there are some of them that, I mean, I've seen, there are just the deep craters.
Yeah.
I mean, they're deep. You know, and it's, I know people in our office get hot about it. It's just, you know.
That weather.
Yeah.
When they do cold patching, it'd be nice. I don't know if the city of Akron has a roller, but at least get a roller out there instead of the Portage County way of just going out there with a shovel and running over it with the truck, right, and then letting everybody else do it with their cars, wasting all that asphalt.
Yeah.
I argue with that office all the time.
Yeah.
I'm a regular caller. Because I don't like undercoating the wheel wells
right.
of my vehicle
right. Right.
with
that.
My tax money of
right.
asphalt that's supposed to be in the pothole because they won't make the effort to roll it in.
Yeah. Any other questions for our friends from ODOT?
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Don't
forget
your computer, Chad.
Other questions? Yes, Mr. Helms.
Your first subject area here. This last Thanksgiving, we had a law firm that sponsored a special bus ride to pick up turkeys or something to that effect. And looking at that, and also knowing that some companies that I've worked for, you know, they've got a basically a $40,000 a year maintenance on their parking lots for their employees and things like that. Is this something that even the social agencies can say, okay, every third Thursday we're going to sponsor a bus for anything in this area, and or the same thing with businesses, that they actually could be actually sponsoring routes? You're looking at special routes, new routes, things like that, research there. But when we're looking at new funding, can we get funding from the industry that's out there and or the social services? I mean, they have a budget. They have so much expenses. If they can say, okay, all the scat buses are going to show up on a Tuesday, all the normal people are going to show up on Thursday, it will coordinate those ridership, so maybe we can have a scat bus that has three people in it instead of the single one that I'm constantly seeing.
Yeah.
But obviously, the social agencies can't handle everybody crowding in there at once. But if we look,
And Jeff, maybe you can speak more of this. I know one of the things that they are really trying to do is improve the efficiency of those scat buses in terms of getting people to make appointments in a certain amount of time so that they can combine trips. At least my understanding is it's just a real challenge because, you know, everybody's doctor's office is, you know, somewhere else, or there's some, it's pretty scattered, but I don't know, Jeff, if you want to add.
It's especially difficult in Portage County because of the distances. It's just not as compact as some of them. And some of the social service agencies, they don't have all the money or the technology to try to work with the public transit operators. Many of the social service agencies just want to transport their own clients. They don't want a trip share. For whatever reason, it could be insurance, could be the cost. So it's difficult, but that's one of the things that we've been talking about for many years now. But ideally, down the road, if it was feasible, or if it becomes feasible, then a transit agency like FARTA could have an integrated scheduling system with the other social service agencies, and it could go a long way to dealing with that kind of problem.
And I think part of the reality too is that there are still social service agencies that literally just take phone calls, write down logs, especially the smaller ones that, you know, they're not talking to anybody else due to finances or what their money is. So it's just
a
challenge.
But it spreads the money. I mean, you get it done for half the price if you could coordinate it.
Oh, definitely. And that's part of the goal. It's just it's really and we've gone through this because, you know, at one point PARTA got some money with Metro and they tried to do a big online clearinghouse where everybody would join. And they received so much push. You know, there were so many people that, or eight organizations that, oh, we don't want to use that system. We want to use our system, or we want to do it. And so it's surprisingly hard, even though you know the end goal is more, would provide a more efficient service. It's not easy to get everybody in agreement of how that should work.
But one of the initiating things is obviously this law firm that did it for that one day, mm-hmm. or half a day, whatever it was.
Right.
If you've got an industry source that, hey, they'll sponsor a one-day thing, let's say when there's a tax holiday, we'll provide, you know, basically a bus ride. We'll pay for that bus ride to this, on this day, to this group of stores and this day to this group of stores or something like that. Mm. So you get the people acceptable to that, having the industry kind of sponsor it at their advertisement dollar. I mean, what's the best?
So you're saying basically like Little Tykes or Joanne Fabrics would sponsor a bus that would take people, pick people up at a specific location.
And once that happens, the social agencies will say, yeah, this is a cheaper way to go. They're not going to be so concerned. I mean, they're going to realize, yeah, this is an acceptable process and it will pay for itself. Actually, we'll be able to serve better. Mm-hmm. You got to get something started. And I couldn't believe this that legal thing that how they did that. Do you know who's coordinated that? Or that was totally in Metro?
Yeah, it's probably just a Metro thing.
One other final comment before we go is finally in the public newspaper over the Record Courier, the abandonment of 5.5 miles of former Erie Lackawanna Conrail Norfolk Southern track from Aurora into rural Mantoway. I would be opposed to that abandonment. I think the cities up there or the Portage County should consider purchasing and preserving that line. I don't know if there's any other comments on that.
No,
not
we did,
opposed to a trail with rails.
We did give your comment to the policy committee at the last meeting.
Okay.
And my understanding now from the little that I've heard is that First Energy is looking to buy it off of Norfolk Southern.
Okay, First Energy purchase outright, and then they probably sell back rights to the trail.
Most likely.
And I imagine that involves dismantlement.
Yeah, I would assume. I think it's First Energy that wants it as a utility corridor.
That's what we've been expecting. And
There's
still that preserving for the future that I think needs to be done, both for industrial. The former Geauga Lake Park area just reeks of industrial redevelopment, and without rail service, that property becomes a brownfield wasteland. Mm-hmm. It's sad to see all those grown-up parking lots.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it?
And it just looks awful up there. And I think if there were to be some sort of office and or industrial manufacturing type thing, what wouldn't be a better place to build there, where you've already got semi-prepared land, than building new greenfield construction out in more rural areas?
Right.
There are also maybe some possibilities for construction opportunities there in Aurora. You seal off that corridor and remove the rail, you lose those opportunities. And I don't want to see us in this present not look to the future.
There's a crowdfunding thing to rebuild Geauga Lake.
Oh, really?
Is it really?
I don't think Cedar Fair would ever let that happen.
Some guy started it.
Yeah.
He's asking for $450 million. He got $40 as a report.
Somehow Cedar Fair, I think that's the parent company of Cedar Point, who bought it to put it out of business.
Yeah.
Don't put that on the record.
Yeah.
But that's my understanding what happened there. And they just wanted to eliminate the competition, and they did that. Mm-hmm. And so unfortunately we lost our local park.
It's interesting that you brought up about the railroad, because I just read in the Rails to Trails website that there was some sort of appeal or application put in to abandon that.
Right, railroad. It's formally been abandoned back
but
in
there,
the fall.
There was a deadline in January for anybody to file a reservation to keep it as a trail.
Yeah, or to keep it as, I'm sorry, as a
rail
as a trail, a rail trail. But they had to, apparently nobody filed it. There was no organization that was willing to file that reservation claim against it. So they said it still was a possibility.
I've heard that there are, someone told me that in some places they have had
the library will close in
trail to rail conversions.
Please check out your materials.
Like, you know, that they've gone back to taking over the trail and turning it back into
the just happened up in Wisconsin. I was aware they spent a bunch of money build a trail, and then a frac sand plant loaded on the line, so they literally put the rails right down on the trail, and no more snowmobiles, and now they're running frac sand rail cars.
Yeah.
I got to get the exact location
but
of that.
I've also heard it being potential for like any new right-of-way for like the Hyperloop would
there
be,
you go.
Rail,
another,
would be rail for trail.
If you don't use the rails, at least you preserve the corridor, and I'm not opposed to having a multi-use corridor. Utility line, trail, and rail.
Yeah,
and pipeline if you need it. There already is some pipelines and fiber optics on that corridor.
Yeah.
It could be a very good example of a multimodal way. Don't throw away the rail option here in the 21st century. We may need it later this century. I think we're going to be thrown out.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you all very much for your time. Appreciate it. Hope you have a safe drive home.